Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today, Lynn Zinser and I are doing a call on the logical way to maintain your benevolence. The logical way to maintain your benevolence. This sounds like a good topic, I hope. Now, in honesty, I came up with this topic after having already decided we were going to do this call. The call was envisioned as a teaser for the Thinking Lab, which is the membership program that I've been running since 2008 for people who wanted to know more about the tactics that I was teaching, which started initially as very much logical tactics, problem-solving tactics, and then has branched out into a tremendous number of emotional management tactics, communication tactics, personal relationship tactics. It's become a whole little universe of skills. And I came up with this name because I think that is really the theme of the skills. All of the tactics that you learn in the Thinking Lab help you maintain a benevolent perspective out in the world, which means to me, that means you see the values everywhere. You see opportunities for pursuing your values everywhere. You know, we may be in a crisis. I was just reading an op-ed and they were listing off all the crises we're in right now. You know, a health crisis, a potentially political crisis, you know, a division of government crisis. There were a whole set of crises happening. And yet, regardless of what's happening in the world outside, you need to, from a position of strength, be able to look at those circumstances and see how to get your values in the present circumstances, how to go forward. And that's what really creates a benevolent universe. You know, Ayn Rand had what she called the benevolent universe premise. And it's described as the belief that the universe is auspicious to human life. Well, what makes it auspicious to human life? It's your mind and your ability to be able to identify values, go after values. Someone, I am muting you. We don't want any background noise. If you want to identify values, go after values, and achieve values. And that is that sense of power over your future is what makes you benevolent. And those are the kinds of skills that we teach in the Thinking Lab. And this is really, these skills taken as a whole, I believe are actually transformational. And I say that, I try not to say that with hubris, but I've had enough people in the lab have major changes to their lives that I believe it's really true. And I think, honestly, I'm the person who was first transformed by the Thinking Lab. I really started this program. I started this as an experiment. I was in a membership program. I thought it was fun to meet on the phone. At that time, it was all audio. I thought it was interesting, so I thought I'd try to do it with some of the people who had taken my classes. And in the end, it turned into a sandbox where I could develop my ideas with people who were interested in hearing them. And really what happened is anything I was learning, I then talked about, interpreted through my lens, which is, what are the objective needs of the mind? How do we make these processes be rational? How do we understand how these support happiness? And why these mental processes are needed, and how do you manage these mental processes? That's what my interest is. And everything I studied from any direction was all looked at from this point of view. And by creating this environment and giving myself a very warm and wonderful place to develop my ideas, I got my authentic voice. And I got myself through some very difficult career times because I had this one place where I could share these ideas where people were interested in hearing them. And in effect, this development was really, I discovered by pursuing this, I discovered how much this could help other people. And really the Thinking Lab has now gone through its own evolution. And instead of being just a sandbox for me to understand ideas, I'm working on it being really how to make this into a system that can really make people, help people who want to transform their lives, do it in a systematic way. And the fact that we have a teaser call today is part of that shift. This is the first time I've ever done promotion specifically for the Thinking Lab. It's the first time I've marketed the Thinking Lab to the public as opposed to giving it as a freebie for one of my classes. And of course, you can't learn as much in a 1 hour call as you can if you join a program and stay in it for 3 months or 6 months or a year or 10 years. But what my goal is that we actually get some sense of some of the skills that are possible to learn and some idea of how you can get this power over your life, have it be a self-contained, inspirational, and informational hour. And in order to do that, and as part of this transformation, I have a co-host here. My co-host today is Lynn Zinser. Lynn has recently joined the staff of the Thinking Lab. The Thinking Lab actually has a staff now. She's joined the staff as a coach. Now, I used to do all the one-on-one coaching in the Thinking Lab, but we're now trying to scale the lab, and she's the first person I've hired to be a coach. Now, Lynn has been, she trained as a lawyer many years ago, worked as a lawyer for many years, but she left law some time ago to pursue activist goals. And she was the director, among other things, she was the director of public outreach for the Ayn Rand Institute. Now, she's been in the Thinking Lab since the beginning, and she has internalized all these things that I've been teaching, and she's a wonderful partner to have in sharing these ideas. So, Lynn, thank you for joining me on this call.
Thank you.
So, our plan is to have it be the Jean and Lynn Show. I've got four key ideas that I relate in the Thinking Lab. And what we're going to do is I'm going to introduce the idea briefly, and then Lynn is going to tell you about how she learned this idea and how it's made a difference in her life. And then I will pull out some of the principles and we'll go on to the next idea. So I hope that's going to work well for everybody. So let's get started. Let's start with the first key idea. And that is the idea that you need to motivate yourself through values, goals, and self-care, not through rules, duty, and self-criticism. So this is a huge thing. This is now the fundamental idea that I teach, that every step you take needs to be motivated by values. Now, sometimes that's in the form of a goal that is helping you achieve a value. Sometimes the value at stake is self-care, but everything you do needs to be motivated by values. This is the principle of motivation by love instead of motivation by fear. Now, I know, Lynn, you have a story about how this has really transformed your life.
I do. But before I start that, I just want to say a couple of comments about the Thinking Lab myself.
Sure.
So I started, as Jean said, when she started it, I jumped on board. And I've been every kind of member that you can be. I was a member who rarely read the newsletters. Then I was a member who read them, and I rarely attended the classes. And then I was a member who did both. And now for the last 3 years, I've been eagerly waiting for Jean's newsletters. I go to the classes, I give feedback to her, and I give feedback to her on the newsletters sometimes as well as the classes. And that's the much better way to be that. And if you are a member of the Thinking Lab already, I would encourage you to give feedback to Jean because she loves it.
I love it. It often turns into classes. Our next.
And the other thing I've done is I've had coaching from the beginning with Jean. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I thought, oh, I don't really think I need the coaching anymore. I can just go to the lab and I can just use the tools. And I thought I'd developed them enough. I could just pick out which ones I needed when I needed them. And after about 2 months, I realized that was not going to work. I needed that assistance. I needed that encouragement. And I find the coaching provides me with two different things. One is I get an answer to a question that I've got and direction on where to go to find that. But more importantly, or just as importantly, maybe, is that sometimes I don't identify the problem correctly. I think it's X, and it turns out to be, no, that's the superficial level, but there's a deeper level, and that's Y. And that's what Jean is an expert at, is being able to do that. And I don't think I'm an expert yet, but what I do know is that I consult with Jean frequently on the various consults that I have. And she sometimes has given me an insight that I hadn't thought of. So I'm really excited to be doing this. And
can I add something on that, Lynn?
Yes.
I think it's the fundamental perspective that gives that insight, right? So you're having those insights too, I know, because we do talk about your consults. And you're having them also, and it's because you've got this fundamental perspective that I've been working out over the last 12 years that you're able to have that. That's where it comes from. It's not a mystery how to get to realize that someone is not working on the real issue. If you understand, for example, that you need to be motivated by values, not threats, you often, in just the presentation of the problem, you can see exactly what's going on.
I would agree with that. I will, yeah. I will say the other thing that is, some people seem to be better at figuring out their own problems and solving them. And that's the great thing about the Thinking Lab, is it provides that flexibility. If you're that kind of a person, then coaching may not help, may not be that much of an added value for me. But if you do want that, then I think coaching is well worth it. And what the Thinking Lab does, with or without coaching, is it provides assistance on how to think better. Because I know that as a result of the Thinking Lab, I think better about the problems. And I think better about the problems despite whatever emotional strain I get. And that strain comes in all kinds of forms. It can be apathy or aversion to a daily goal, like, I don't want to do that. Or I can feel overloaded or fearful, frustrated, guilty, even guilty about guilt.
Right. And I shouldn't be feeling guilty. I shouldn't be feeling guilty. That's really a way to spiral out of control fast.
And Jean's tools and techniques have helped me set up systems and habits and procedures that address this and minimize that kind of strain. And that gets to this, to the tools is, I mean, well, it gets to the whole issue of motivation by love. Because one of the things that Jean does is reframe other techniques and tools using and conceptualizing it within the objectivist framework, and also then creating tools and the language and the techniques that apply objectivist epistemology and psychoepistemology. And so one big insight for me, which is new within the last few months, is in relation to motivation by fear and motivation by love. And that is that she asks the question, if it's immoral for us to force someone else to do an action, why is it moral for us to do it to ourselves?
To force ourselves, right.
To force ourselves. And her answer is, of course, it isn't. But when you talk about with a lot of other coaches that deal with motivation, a lot of other psychological systems, they talk about using willpower or forcing your way through to get to a problem. And Jean rejects that completely, because motivation by love is the most powerful motivational force there is. And so she's created techniques and tools to help you persuade your mind, to actually help you get to the right, get towards objectivity, get towards rationality. And one thing that I've used this for is with my own negativity. About a year and a half ago, I was at the nadir of my self-esteem, and I was really negative about myself, about my capabilities, about going forward with my life. What was I going to do? And I didn't think I could do anything. And part of this resulted in my berating myself whenever I failed to meet my own expectations. You witch! You lousy idiot. What is wrong with you? Why can't you get this right? I would use the most strident, horrible language in my inner mind. These words were never said out loud. And I certainly would never say them out loud to any other person. But I was saying them to myself. I use worse language than this, but you get the picture. I could really be mean, aggressive, and hateful, but I'm no longer that person today because of Jean's techniques. I'm kinder to myself, as kind as I can be to a stranger. And sometimes I'm even as kind as I can be to my friends. And I'm also better at meeting expectations. And that's because of these techniques. And I'm going to start with some very basic ones. The two that I started with in the beginning were simply thinking on paper and journaling. Two basic essentials of Jean's program. Thinking on paper is asking yourself a question, writing with a goal. What, you know, you set yourself a goal and you write, and you respond to that in complete sentences. Journaling is really downloading your thoughts and feelings on paper. And then I progressed to various other techniques, which I'll talk about later, or you can ask me questions, Jean, whatever you want. But that, sure. Me, it was a year and a half later. It's so fabulous to not be hateful, and I even like myself now most of the time. Love myself a lot, and I used to hate myself a lot.
And it's shocking to say that, isn't it? Right. I mean, it was shocking to me when I realized that I was actually experiencing self-hatred at times. Right. It's so unfair. Right.
Right. It's not objective. It's not objective at all. It's not objective for anyone on this call. It's not objective for anyone. It's just not.
So I'd like to comment on that, if this is a good time for me to jump in. You know, there are a couple things here. One of the things I think is important, there are a lot of people who would say, stop criticizing yourself. I mean, there are a lot of people who say that, but what they say is just don't do that. Right? But for people who want to be logical, who actually think there's a right and a wrong, you need to understand what is going on with self-criticism. So first of all, you need to be, okay, look, if there's a problem, I am going to fix it, first of all. You're not opposed to hearing a negative thought. The problem with self-criticism is not that you notice that you did something that you don't think you should have done. The problem is that you make it an attack on your own character. And this is the thing that is completely unjust and actually sets up a vicious cycle that makes you actually be less moral than you would be, because it sets up a vicious cycle where you are focused on what's wrong with you, and you actually make yourself feel worse than, which makes it more difficult for you to focus on values and go after them. You build a cloud. I actually only realized fairly recently, there's a time course to emotions. When you feel an emotion, it takes a while for it to then calm down. And I thought mine was longer than other people's, because it could take me a half an hour after I got really upset before I got calm. I finally figured out that what was going on was the thought, self-critical thoughts I had when I got upset and thought I was, you know, say irrationally upset, the self-critical thoughts I had that actually extended the time that I was in that state and was really not functional mentally. Now I had learned enough to stop, you know, don't talk to people in that state, you know, retreat, try to calm down, whatever. But, you know, if you can reduce that to a minute, from 30 minutes, you've saved 29 minutes that you can do something useful with your life, and you will be a lot happier. And this is done entirely by recognizing that at that moment when something bad has happened, well, what's the value at stake now? What are the rational options now? You may have made a mistake, and that may inform your choices now, but what matters is, how are you going to go forward? What is the rational way forward? And spending a lot of time, there may be some times when you want to look at your life and understand parts about your life, but that's a delimited thing that you would do as part of journaling. Right now, in the middle of a workday or whatever, what you want to do is you want to focus on values and see how you can actually gain something, given the fact that you didn't start last week, or given the fact that you sometimes have trouble with this, or given that it's uncomfortable. And that's what I try to teach. You want to set up a virtuous cycle so that if you take a small step, it makes it easier to take the next step. You want to see that everything you do is making it you more motivated to do the things that you think are important. You're actually reinforcing values and making you stronger and healthier. You're developing the knowledge, the skills, the energy. You want everything to be building toward the positive. And that's what this focus on values does. Now, there was a handout. The handout is really a list of the self-study courses available in the Thinking Lab. And we just did this to concretize in some way. There's a lot of material there. And this idea of motivation by values rather than rules, or let's see, values and goals and self-care rather than rules, duties, and self-criticism, this is what I would call the basic material. It's throughout everything, but it's in the level one understanding your mental needs. These are the courses that really deal with this. Courses on how to understand emotions, courses on how to make your thinking more objective. These are like the fundamental tools that you need and that we teach in the Thinking Lab. Shall we go on to the second point, Lynn? Okay, great. So the second point, these are from the description that you guys got. The second set of tools that we have are tools that help you sustain enthusiastic effort for an ambitious goal. Now, this can be a challenge, particularly if the goal is very long range, or it's daunting, or it's just very complicated, because you will hit major setbacks along the way. Now, I learned these kinds of tools because I have a very long-range ambition. People have probably heard this one way or another, but my long-range goal is to figure out how to retrain a mind that has been compromised a little or a lot by the Comprachicos, by progressive education, which I think my mind was. And I have essentially repaired that damage, I am happy to say. And my mission is to figure out how to teach anyone else who wants to do that to be able to do the same thing. And that is this is a 30 years and counting, and I'm going to do it or die trying. But that passion has helped me get through thick or thin along the way. And working with people in the Thinking Lab, I discovered that it was something that I had learned, a set of tools that people needed, even when it wasn't necessarily a career passion and they didn't have that same do it or die trying perspective. I think you had a story on this also. Is that right, Lynn?
Yes, this actually, I'm going to use it in connection with this, because this changing my negative mind into a positive mindset was a long-term goal. And I realized that it needed to be a long-term goal, or that it would take a long time, because in doing some thinking on paper and journaling, I realized that I'd been doing negative thinking in my mind from high school forward. I've been doing it all my life. And not as bad. Sometimes it was better, sometimes it was worse. But it was a big deal for me. And at times I felt I wasn't making as much progress with what I started with the tools. And so I tried different tools within Jean's lab, and so I used, I'll just talk about a few of the things I did, and then I'll talk about the specific tools. So one of the things that I did initially was to become aware, just make myself to try to introspect and to become aware of when I had a negative thought. And in the beginning, I wouldn't really realize I was having it until I was two or three levels down the spiral. And then I would pause and stop myself and try to recognize that that's what I was doing, and try to substitute a more positive, benign thought about that. It's hard now to remember all of the negative thoughts I had, because they actually have dissolved. It's not a matter that they're packed away in some suitcase that's going to come, you know, I'm going to open up sometime and it's going to explode on me. They really have gone away. But
you've actually reprogrammed your knowledge and your values.
Mm-hmm. I have. Right. And so now my thought comes much more neutral, and I notice the thoughts now at the very first level, not, you know, that, oh, I didn't do this. Like yesterday, I woke up and I had a whole morning planned of intense activities I needed to do on a pretty rigid time scale. And I didn't want to get out of bed. And I laid there for an extra 15 minutes. And that put me off my schedule. I mean, I really had it. But I didn't just lay there and go negative. I started actually thinking of the positive values that I had and what I wanted to do. And that got me out of bed. And then when I did get out of bed, I didn't berate myself for laying in bed. I said, well, okay, now what are we going to do to make up the rest of the time? Because I'm now pro-action oriented and not negative action. And so I did my walk, which I do. That's one of the first things I do when I get up is a 30-minute walk. And I cut off some time off of that. But I didn't cut all the time off of that. I cut time off of the next activity as well. And then I was back on schedule within an hour and a half, because I just cut a little time off of each one. And I was able to do that and make my 9 o'clock appointment, which was a hard done. But one of the things that I realized in doing this is that in the process of getting to that point, I actually recognized that I had scheduling problems and I had planning problems. I wasn't allowing the right amount of time for the thing. So of course I was going to be off. Part of the trouble was I didn't know that I would think that something could be done in a lot less time than I thought it would. But the other part was I might get the times right, but I wasn't scheduling any time for breaks or interruptions or rest. And so in the afternoon, with all of that coming on, I was behind and or I wasn't as able to function because I hadn't taken any breaks and I really wasn't as efficient in doing the afternoon projects, even when I scheduled them.
And you were exhausted, right.
And I was exhausted.
Right, yeah. You need to take care of your mind. Self-care is actually really important.
Self-care is very important. Okay. So I had to rethink about, and I used Gene's scheduling and infrastructure and just-in-time planning and a lot of different techniques to handle each of these things. But that's an area where I realized it wasn't just that I was thinking negative because I was lazy and which is what I thought initially, you lazy person for not being as productive as you could be. I actually realized that there were real problems, real issues that I needed to address that I wasn't addressing.
Right. There were skills you needed to develop. Right. You had a certain number. I mean, let's face it. You were a lawyer for years. You had plenty. You had a number of planning skills, but you, like everyone that I know who switched from working for other people to working by themselves, it is a complete different level of planning that you need to be able to do when someone is not paying you a salary. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
It really is. I mean, you really have to.
You don't have a lot of appointments when you have a lot of flexibility in when you can do.
You get to choose. You get to choose. And it's completely selfish, but you then need to make all those decisions and you need to create that value hierarchy. And I think
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's one of the big things that I've learned about sustaining effort on a long-range goal. And when you set that long-range goal, your values do not reflect your intellectual conclusion. And you can tell that because they don't automatically motivate you to do that big effort. You need a method for going after this long-range goal that builds you up so that eventually you do have that desire. Like I've told this story. When I first started as a psychoepistemologist, I had to force myself to sit down at my desk to do the work, which was really distressing to me and confusing to me. And it didn't make any sense. And I eventually figured that out. But I had this with writing also. I had periods where I really needed a tremendous number of tools to get myself to sit down at a desk and write. And initially it was for 1 or 2 hours. Well, I love to write at this point. My only problem with writing right now is that I have other business responsibilities that sometimes get in the way. but I love to write. And that is a learned, I've retrained my value system so that writing is a very high value to me. And if I have a free morning, I can sit down and write. It is no problem. I am totally motivated to do that. And in fact, when I get depressed, I have learned that that means I'm probably not writing enough and I need to just throw out appointments and schedule time for writing, because that's something that just brings me so much joy. But that's because I have successfully reprogrammed my value hierarchy. And this is an example of how, if you want to, you need to understand things in terms of fundamentals to really know how to solve some of these big problems. I've seen this with people, other people in the thinking lab, where they report that they're not doing a whole bunch of administrative work. And I happen to know what their biggest value is. And I say, have you done X recently, where X is painting or fiction writing or some other thing that I happen to know is a very big value of theirs? And they'll say no. And if they will, suddenly their motivation changes. So I think that this is part of what you get in the thinking lab, is you get an integrated perspective on where motivation problems come from. And the system is designed to straighten out motivation problems by programming your value hierarchy to reflect your conscious conclusions. That's what all the methods do. You have any thoughts on that, Lynn? I mean, I'm curious how that relates actually to the project of getting rid of self-criticism.
Well, I mean,
Did I put you on the spot?
No. It's just that it feels like, I mean, in one sense, it felt like to me, as I look back on this, it seems like I went through every exercise that you have in getting rid of this, because this particular negativity affected every part of my life.
Right.
So I can't really point to one exercise that was more influential to me, because at each juncture I did something different, because I realized this was happening and I needed to address this. I needed to address my values, or I needed to address my infrastructure or my emotions.
And this is very typical when you have something like this, where you knew you weren't going to change this on a dime because it had been programmed over years. You don't know all of the obstacles you're going to hit. You just know that they're going to be big. And basically you uncovered them as you went. You uncovered the different obstacles.
Your help.
I am glad to have been of assistance in that. You know, I think sometimes people make major, major changes in their psychology in response to an existential crisis. So you see this with people get divorced and then they change their lives completely, or they have a illness. I belong to the National Speakers Association, and there are some people there, you know, who've become paralyzed from the waist down or the neck down, and have done amazing things. Their lives have turned on a dime and they've decided to do something about it. And I really think that the Thinking Lab is designed to help people make these changes without having to have some existential crisis. That you can actually decide, you know what, I'm going to change the way my life is, without having been put in a wheelchair and realized, boy, you know what, if I don't do something about this, I'm just going to wither away and die. I mean, we want you to be able to buy a long range choice, to be able to take these steps and get the motivation to do it. So I think that's a big part of what the Thinking Lab is about.
I think there's another thing that I want to say about the Thinking Lab that I've seen in the classes and hearing other people talk about their problems or their issues at the time. And that is that a lot of these issues are more typical than
I think. Yeah.
I never told anyone about my self-esteem issues until recently, because I was ashamed of it. You know, I felt like that's not the way I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to have a high self-esteem.
Right. Yeah.
And what's
wrong with me?
What's wrong with me? And other issues too. I mean, I just think that it's, none of us or none of us, I think, grew up with perfect backgrounds such that we were able to learn a healthy self-esteem. And if one of you are fortunate enough to have that, then you've done that by your own effort. And that's a great achievement. And I'm getting there and I'm very happy about that. But I think it's a real achievement, and many people suffer from one or more issues related to the way their mind functions.
Yes, and you know, a big part of my work, I think, is normalizing this. I happen to have a certain hubris about this. I think I actually have had self-esteem from the beginning, but it hasn't always manifested itself. And so I've actually been puzzled. I actually don't even think about these issues in terms of self-esteem. If you've heard me talk about this, I think self-esteem is an action. You choose to esteem yourself. It's not a fixed character trait or personality trait. It's something that you choose to do. You can choose right now to do things that are good for you because you're worth it, and that's your reason for doing it. So it's the recognition that good people, because I consider myself a good person, rational people, smart people, hardworking people, because I put in tremendous effort, could have all the problems that are sometimes associated with, that would make you feel ashamed because it seems like you shouldn't have them. Part of my strength is that I had enough self-esteem to think, if I have these problems, other people have these problems. And so I talked about it with people in the thinking lab, and what I heard repeatedly was, wow, you were talking about something that's happened to me, and that the normalizing of it, that this is the way that I think about it is, you have a value hierarchy that you have, meaning you have certain values right now, and they match or they don't match your current conscious conclusions. And if you're setting new ambitious goals, there will always be a mismatch. And if you have a mismatch between your conscious intentions and the stored values, you will be put into conflict and you will have all of the problems that we hear about. Now, it's true that if you have some old baggage from various issues, this can exacerbate it and make it worse. And there may be some destructive motivation that you need to disintegrate. And that does magnify the effect. But the basic problem is a normal problem that every ambitious person faces. And if you can solve those problems, if you can learn how to take action on a value basis, on a day-to-day basis, that gives you, it sets up a virtuous cycle that helps you to solve all of these problems and get rid of all the old baggage and take on greater and greater projects. So I think that's one of the messages I really try to get across. You know, this actually ties into the third topic that we were going to talk about, which is, I think that a lot of people come into the thinking lab wanting to choose a long-range goal that they are passionate about. They've read that they should have a central purpose and they feel guilty because they don't have a central purpose. And, you know, this happens. This is not just at the beginning of life. So there have been some young people who have come in to find their first career direction, which is wonderful. A lot of people have come in midlife looking, you know, they're at the end of a phase and they're looking for the next phase, which I think actually you've been through that with me, Lynn.
Yes, I have.
And then we have some people who are older who have retired and are saying, well, what do I do now? I'm retired. And I think you still need a productive purpose. It may be a 10-hour a week productive purpose because you're retired, you have less energy, and you don't need to make a living. But you still need some productive purpose, which is organizing your activity. You know, there's a saying, I believe it's in Leonard Peikoff's book on objectivism, talks about the central purpose as your choice of the happiness you will choose to pursue. What you're doing when you choose a productive purpose, a productive central purpose, is you're saying, I'm going to organize my life around achieving goals in this area. And the achieving of the goals is what's going to bring you joy. And that is what's going to add up to a sense of a meaningful life. So it's very important, no matter what age you're at. And this is something that, you know, I had this driving career passion starting 30 years ago, last July. And so I didn't actually have a problem with this, but then a lot of people came to me with it and we wound up talking about, I wound up breaking down, what could they do to help with this? Do you have a story on this also, Lynn?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So I actually, when I left the Institute, I actually was trying to figure out, okay, now what am I going to do? Because the Institute closed its office and I was laid off, and so the East Coast office, the Eastern Front, as we used to call it. And so I then was trying to figure out what to do. And I'd like to do marketing. And I tried that anyway. I went through a number of different steps. And then I thought, I think what I want to do is focus on my central purpose. And so I did. And that's how I got into my negativity, because I realized I had this, I was in unable really to do it. But eventually, as I worked my way through that issue, I started back working on my central purpose using the tools that Jean has. There's an article and various questions and steps to take, and first of all, the materials helped me understand more clearly what a central purpose is and how it relates to your career or to your life. And I actually found, I found or discovered my central purpose. And I put it that way because I realized that my whole life had been evolving around this activities and kind of a spiral around all of the work I'd ever done. But it was in many ways a hobby first and whatever. And I actually formulated my central purpose before Jean and I talked about coming in to the thinking lab and
as a coach.
Mm-hmm. As a coach. And having done this is what actually tipped me into saying, yeah, this is what I want to do. And I love it. And it feels like I'm home. I mean, it just feels like a really great thing. And I wrote it out. I mean, so that I could read it. I can mostly say it, but I'm not, it still is, I'm still playing with the wording a little bit. Do you want me to share it?
I absolutely want to hear it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. My central purpose is to facilitate the study, understanding and application of Ayn Rand's ideas to adults, primarily fans of Ayn Rand, to enrich their own lives.
I can see why coaching fit with it. What was that?
I said, and that's what I've done my whole life.
That's what you've done your whole life, right? There was a question in the chat about your background in law.
I was a courtroom lawyer. I mean, we called ourselves trial lawyers, but you know, I think in 20 years I was in 11 trials or something like that. So you don't go to, and I was in civil litigation. I went to law school to defend businesses. That's why I went to law school. That was the purpose of that. And that's what I did. I defended oil companies, railroads, flower shops, you know, all kinds of cases. And I loved it for a long time until the legal system kind of got to me. The judges started forcing us to settlement conferences before we knew what the other side's arguments or anything were. And saying to me, because I was defending all the time, your client, either one of two things, your clients are big companies, so they can afford this. This is just a profit and loss thing for them. Or they would say, insurance is taking care of this. So it doesn't really, so it's just insurance money. And there was no thought by the judges of what's right or what's wrong. It was simply a matter of, I had the money, so we should just pay. And that really eventually
shocking.
Got to me.
That's really shocking.
But I really, my clients, you know, it's very interesting because I never had a client, regardless of whether they were small individuals, which I did have also occasionally with their own business, I did some cases for Lloyd's of London. So I mean, it was, you know, I had all kinds of different, and my clients never said, to me, the person, the people that were doing it, they never said to me, oh, it's just money. They were always concerned with whether they'd done right or wrong. Now, they often settled because it was cheaper to settle than go to court, but.
But they were concerned with right or wrong. Good for them. Good for them. Yeah. Well, I'd like to say one more thing about this issue of a central purpose. You know, you said it basically, you did thinking, and the process that I recommend, this, there's a course, if you look on your list of courses, one of the courses under goal setting is developing a central purpose, which puts together the various material that I've done in this. And the thing that I've recommended everyone who's come to me with this is to spend 3 to 6 months journaling every day. So this requires some of the earlier skills, but spend a half an hour. And the challenge is to find something new to think about every day for half an hour for 3 to 6 months. Now, I said I came with a driving central purpose, but the reason I was able to teach this, it's always, to be a good teacher, you need to have seen the issue yourself in some way. And for me, the way it came out is I found I needed to change my central purpose because so much when I started, my purpose was on understanding. I wanted to understand what the truth was. And about now, it's now about, well, it's hard to pinpoint the time, but approximately 5 or 6 years ago, it shifted from understanding to communication. And that it's gone even further now to systematization of the ideas. But that has actually shifted my priorities with respect to my business and really how important the business is to me. The business was always sort of an afterthought, and now it's not an afterthought. It's actually a real central focus because I'm trying to systematize the ideas, and the business is the means of doing that. But the way you do this is a learnable thing. This is something that you can do. This is not some mystical insight that you need to have by I don't think you did, but I want to reassure them that there's a method for this, and that's what we do in the Thinking Lab. Is I work out these methods, I share them, people try them, they give me feedback, I give them new ideas, and there's now a real big body of knowledge.
I have one more thing I want to add because of the question. Law was not part of my central purpose. I really had a driving energy to do that, after reading Atlas Shrugged, to defend businesses. Mm. What I have been doing all my life is I had community groups in my 20s. I formed community groups in my 30s and continued those in my 40s. Part of it was studying Ayn Rand's ideas and figuring out how to apply those ideas in our lives. And then currently, I'm an Objectivist Toastmasters, and I'm also the leader of the community group down here in Florida.
Yep.
It's just part, and we study, that's the other thing. We have two study groups in Florida. So
both of which run by Lynn.
Yes, yeah. Both of which are run by me.
Yep. Great.
So that's what I mean by the central purpose, that I've been doing it all my life. I just, as an adult, but I just didn't realize. And now with Jean's coaching, I'm applying Ayn Rand's ideas through Jean.
Right. And for those, because I'm sure there are some people who are not objectivists on the line. My goal is to try to make these ideas objective. There's a huge Ayn Rand influence. If you know Ayn Rand, you recognize it in what I do. And I try to give her credit appropriately. I also give other people credit, which brings us to the next topic, which is transforming your relationships with other people for the better without their needing to change. And I'll tell you the biggest influence here, Marshall Rosenberg. If you've been following me for the last 10 years, you've heard about him quite a bit. He's the second biggest influence on me. And if you look at him next to Ayn Rand, he seems to be a completely different perspective. I mean, she says, judge and be prepared to be judged. And he seems to be very anti-judgment. But what I've learned from him, he wrote a book called Nonviolent Communication. And I now have over 200 hours of training in nonviolent communication. And it has radically changed my relationships with other people. And it had a big influence in having me understand the issue of being focused on values and everything. The way that I would sum it up, what I learned from him is that when you're dealing with another person, if you want to connect with them, now this is all Gene language, right? This is all Gene language. Everything you get from me, I try to state in the most objective, rational way possible. And that requires a certain amount of interpretation, but I think if you know Rosenberg, you can recognize this, but don't look for these formulations in his stuff. If you want to have a connection with someone, you need to find the rational element in them. That is what you're going to connect with. So if someone could be very upset and you think it's nuts that they're upset at this point, like I just, in a newsletter I wrote, I used the example, I got upset with how someone was drying a pot about a week ago. Now this is a pot and a dish towel, and I didn't think it was being dried properly, and I got upset. Now you could say this is totally irrational. Actually, I think it was irrational. It was irrational in the sense that it was triggered by an out of context issue, and it did not reflect my value hierarchy. But that doesn't mean I'm irrational. Now, the way that I calmed down was by figuring out what the real value at stake for me was. It turns out that at that moment, I wanted some quiet time to figure something out. And my means, I was going through a cleaning ritual to get to that. Cleaning is something I like to do. I like seeing things clean. I like the counters all clean. I like the dishes put away. And I was doing that as something to get to my quiet time. And this other person, unbeknownst, you know, had no idea this was going on and came in to help. And instead, it just, you know, pushed these buttons. And it took me a little bit of time to realize that. But once I realized that what I wanted was quiet time, okay, first of all, I can, you know, apologize for being a little short about how the dish drying was being done. And I can just go off by myself. I don't want to talk to you right now. I'm just going to go be by myself right now. I can go and meet my own needs. Being able to do that for yourself is huge. Being able to see, gee, I'm having this apparently irrational reaction. Let me find the rational value at stake here that I can go after. And that calms you down. You stop criticizing yourself. It's huge. But if you can do that with another person, it means that you can have a political conversation with someone who you don't agree with, and yet you can find an element where you, some aspect, like let's take, I'm worried about being overly controversial here.
Tell my story.
Okay, great.
Okay, then you can think about what you want to say.
Sure,
about
right.
So I use this actually in a family issue. Mm. My parents died. My father was the last to die. And they had an estate, which included a lot of farmland. And there were five of us. I have four siblings. And there was a deep divide on whether we should sell the farmland or whether to keep it in the family. And it was a 3-2 split. Two wanted to keep and three wanted to sell. And it was very acrimonious. Among my sisters, there were tears and it was very, very difficult. And I used this, I think it was my first training was about the same time with Gene. I can't remember whether it's the first or second training on this that I've done with Gene.
Right, the 4-day intensive that we did.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And right. So this was the discussion. If you were, you know, anybody here on the call that was there will remember, this is the what I talked about.
Yeah. What
and the first one. Mm-hmm. I used, in the course of that training, I discovered some tools, and so I went back and I actually. I was the only one out of the five who had this any kind of training in this, and I started using the techniques, and we were able to resolve the estate. And I will tell you that before I started doing this, I think all five of us thought that we would resolve it, but we would never speak to each other again. And that is not what happened. We were able to resolve it because I was able to actually diffuse the defensiveness in the other people in helping them trust. Trust is the basic element in conversation. When you're trying to connect with somebody, you need to trust. You need to have trust in them. And if you don't have trust in them, then you're not going to have. And these techniques helped me to rebuild trust with my siblings, and we were able to resolve it. And I will report today that we've had Christmases together. I talk to them frequently. We see each other, and we email, and we have relationship. Yeah, there's some damage there, but it's minor compared to where we thought it would be. And if I'd had this technique earlier, I might have been able to, it might have gone differently earlier, and we might not ever have had the problems. But it really was useful to me in that context, which is not a political context, but it was an important context to me.
Right.
My siblings are important to me.
And it was a family issue that led me to nonviolent communication in the first place. So I'm very empathetic with that. I agree. And it's, you know, sometimes people get concerned when they hear about these skills about, don't you need to judge these people morally? And of course you need to judge them morally, but you need to hold the full context also, because typically in these situations where there's someone who you want to have a relationship with and yet they're misbehaving in some way, according to your view, they are mixed, and there are areas of them that are good that you want to have a relationship with and areas of them that you want to have some boundaries. And what this method does of, in effect, identifying the rational values at stake, it helps you build the bridge to the rational element and strengthen the rational element without sanctioning the irrational. And so if you want to be a source of fostering rationality in the world, I don't know any skill that is more helpful than this skill, rationally connected conversations.
And I just want to add one more thing. There is a member of the Thinking Lab who is now focusing her efforts on communicating this genes rationally connected conversation techniques out into the world. And I think that's marvelous that she's speaking to other local groups and to different organizations and trying to actually, so that people can talk politics and other issues without resorting to violence,
right,
or threats.
Right, or cutting off their relationships. Because if you just stop talking, there's no, it's a tragedy when reasonable people just can't have any conversation together. All right, so, you know, the bottom line here, we're coming up on the hour, so I'm just going to bring things to a package and then we'll take some questions. These are learnable skills. These are all learnable skills. Psychology is not as complicated as people make it out to be. It's actually fairly straightforward. And self-awareness of your values, knowing what you know, knowing what you don't know, knowing what you care about, identifying if you have some boogeymen that you're actually afraid of and you maybe need to dissolve. This is not the hardest thing in the world. It's something that's a learnable skill, and we've got people learning it in the Thinking Lab. If you would like to join the Thinking Lab, that would be wonderful. We make you welcome. Membership in the lab is $75 a month. That gets you access to this long list of self-study courses. These vary in length from 4 hours to, it depends how you count it, but some of them are more like 10 or 12 hours on a number of different subjects. There are two new classes every month. Our next class is Happiness is the Fuel of Achievement. And the class after that is Dealing with Self-Criticism, very timely topics for this discussion. In addition, there's a library of written up how-tos on all the different skills. Lynn has been calling them by name. You were going to show some of your handouts, some of your study guides. There's one of the classes called Making Thinking Tactics Second Nature talks about the importance of cheat sheets. Cheat sheets with the various skills and various things. And as a special offer, and if you want coaching, Lynn is available for coaching for an additional $75 a month. You can get one coaching call with her. There's a discount if you get two a month. And this is all available at thinkingdirections.com if you just look under the Thinking Lab. If you join today, I have a special offer because it would be a mistake to run this without a special offer. I will throw in a copy of the Thinker's Toolkit. Now, what the Thinker's Toolkit is it's a physical manual that has the top 10 tactics from the Thinking Lab. It's got a cheat sheet, and it has your thinking directions branded four-color pen and thinking notebook and mental cleanup card. And I'll throw that in if you register for that today. So with that, I would love to see you in the Thinking Lab, but I also want this class, this freebie, to be helpful in itself. So I would love to take questions. If you have, we weren't able to get into so much of the how-to. We were more talking about the vision and what you can do. But if you have some how-to questions, I would love to take questions. Feel free to raise your hand.
So I really like that Gina actually said in here that she was partners with me for one of the exercises and that she's wondered. So I'm glad, Gina, that I could tell you it worked out great.
Fabulous. All right. I'm just looking in the... I'm just looking down here. Okay, we're looking for questions. Who has a question for me or Lynn or both of us? Nell. I think you need to unmute yourself. I tried to unmute you.
All righty. Is there a best order in which to go through the library or the self-study courses on the Thinking Lab? This is just...
It's a lot of stuff.
kept me from really getting into anything.
Well, great. Well, and I'll confess to you that one of the things in the plan is starting in January, I'm going to create an onboarding program. And because I think what we need is a more structured way to get people through the basic set. Mm-hmm. Because I'm working on this all the time, and I think that's what we're going to do. But I'll tell you, this is one of the reasons. Did you get the handout that has this little picture?
Yes.
It's got the, yes. It's basically learn about the mental needs first. Now, you don't necessarily need to do everything in that level one, understanding your mental needs, but those are, I would certainly read through all of them. And I would definitely go through, if you haven't done Tap Your Own Brilliance, if you've done Do What Matters Most, there's some overlap, but I would do Tap Your Own Brilliance also. Mm-hmm. And I would read through. The other ones have a fair amount of written material. You may not listen to every class, but I would at least read through them. And then the level two, you know, the three categories are productivity, goal setting, and communication. I would drive that by what is most important to you right now. So what is the biggest issue for you right now? If you don't mind sharing, either you could share it kind of generally if you don't want to say something specific now, then I could suggest what would be more helpful.
Well, I have just been drifting. I did have one project that I had started where I was working with a conservative group to get some information out, some non-partisan information out to the public. Mm-hmm. And I've been with them for a little over a year, and I just finally decided it was taking too much of my time, and last Wednesday I just told them that I'm going to have to back out, pull back, and not participate as much as I have been. And I've been hosting the meetings on Zoom because I have the lowest level of paid membership, which allows a meeting longer than we would ever have, 24 hours. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So I have backed out of that. I'm keeping the Zoom membership because I like being able to do stuff with family and friends out of town also, but it just took a big load off, and now I'm where I really need to get some direction.
Well, so I would say if you have like thinking on paper down and you have introspection skills down, I would go straight to the developing a central purpose class. And the reason I say this, you know, you're basically looking for, I happen to know that you're more in a retirement phase right now.
Yes.
Right now. But you need something that is going to give meaning and structure to your life.
Yes.
And in the period where you're in this sort of at loose ends, the thing that gives meaning and structure is the campaign to figure that out. which is a really wonderful thing to do, because you get to as part of reviewing, like, for example, one of the things that I recommend in this half an hour a day that you spend thinking about your or chewing your values, basically, you'll do things like you'll name three good things that happened the previous day, and then spend the rest of the half hour thinking about why they made the list and why they're meaningful to you.
Oh,
and I'll tell you, you will be in a good mood at the end of that half hour to do whatever. And you'll do it again the next day with a different set of concretes. And then the next day, maybe you'll think about, there's a pattern. Why is there this pattern? And then the next day you'll say, well, I think top number one is this. What would that look like? And you'll analyze it. You'll do something different every day, but every day that half hour will be spent chewing your values and what is meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one else who can do this work. And this self-awareness is very, very fulfilling. And of course, you have a lifetime of productive activity that you can reflect on and that you can celebrate as part of this time also. So, it's not, something will come out of it and you get to choose what comes out of it. But the process of reflecting on your values is actually a very nurturing process. And particularly when you're feeling at odds, it helps ground you and help you feel good about, you don't know what the next phase is going to be, but it's going to be something good.
Yeah. I really appreciated Lynn's talk about struggling with negativity, because I know sometimes it's implicit, but I know it's there so much of the time.
Yeah, me too. I appreciated her too. You know, this is something I learned from the people in the lab, and Lynn, you made this a production for a year and a half, and I'll tell you, it was recently something you said about saying no to self-criticism, which was also helpful for me to get rid of another layer of self-criticism myself. We can definitely learn from each other. One other thing I should say, when you're in the Thinking Lab, the other thing you get is you can email me anytime. I promise at least a short response. So one of the things that I do is I often make suggestions. People tell me specific things they're concerned about, and I point them to the resources. That's what we've done. You know, as I said, I'm in the process of developing an onboarding program that will be more structured, but the way that we've dealt with this problem is by Ask Jean.
Thank you, Jean.
Good. Thanks, Nell.
Helen,
Lynn, yes.
Hi.
Helen, do you have a question or comment? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Can you hear me? I can't tell because I'm on the phone, and I guess you can hear me, right?
Yes, we hear
you. Okay. So, I love my cousin, a wonderful person. We could not be more politically separated.
Uh-huh.
So he said to me, you're going to guess my position. So he said to me, he lives in the middle of nowhere, but he said, well, I'm now carrying a concealed weapon, and you would be much safer if you could open your jacket and say to people that I had a concealed weapon. Needless to say, I just became quiet because I was too agitated. But so what are some general kinds of questions to get to some common values? Because this is a good person, like he would do anything to help an individual. And so what are the kinds of things I might have said to him other than, you know, what are your core values? You know, like what are some good questions to ask when somebody comes up with a position that you feel very strongly you don't understand it?
Well, you know, Helen, the first thing is I think the Rationally Connected Conversations, which is an adaptation of NVC, starts with a completely different mindset from that, because you don't start with questions. You start with grounding yourself emotionally. So how did you feel when he said that? I mean, what did you feel when he said that?
I thought, that is insanity. The last thing we need is more people walking around with guns. But I wasn't going to say that to him because
totally
I knew that
fine.
Would not lead to
right.
productive
so,
conversation.
Right, that's right.
Yes.
And I noticed you haven't actually gotten to your feelings yet. You had several thoughts, but I'm guessing that you were feeling scared or horrified, something like that.
I was horrified, I was angry, I was like, where does, why does he think this way? You know, like, so, he's surrounded by cornfields, and they're not, you know, but look.
So puzzled, just, you know, also like, puzzled. So horrified puzzled, and puzzled. Yeah.
And so I didn't want to react badly to him. I didn't want to.
And afraid. So you notice you had three different feelings, at least three different feelings, horrified, puzzled, and afraid. Now, one of the things that's really important to understand is that until you get emotionally grounded, you're not in a position to have a great conversation with someone else. And if you're feeling that many feelings, you are not emotionally grounded. The thing that makes you emotionally grounded is awareness of the deep value at stake for you. And you need to know that for each, if you have three intense emotions, you need to know it for each of those three. And it doesn't, and the words that you have, the words that come to mind are, he's nuts, this is crazy, he's in the middle of cornfields, this is the last thing we need. None of those have yet gotten to the deep rational values. So the skill is be able to take those words, get to the feeling. The feeling is the alert to the value. So let's do them one at a time. So the easy one is puzzled. The easy one, what were you hoping for? What were you wishing for in that moment when you were puzzled? Maybe clarity?
Understanding. Right. Clarity about what his, I don't know if I would say his fears or the values that he felt threatened, the threatened values. In other words,
what was going on in his mind? Yeah. Right.
Right. Right.
And how could you make sense of it? So clarity, great. What about the horror? You're horrified. This is the last thing we need. What are you really, what are you thinking? Oh my God, I need to protect you. What is the value that was really of concern to you there?
That our country, I used to think people were paranoid when they said this, but that what happens in the next 2 months could lead to violence in the street of Americans turning against each other.
So you're afraid of civil war, anarchy? Mm-hmm. So let's that's the negative, that's the threat. So we got to get all the way to the rational value. So you value, I don't know if this is the phrase that you would use. Would you use law and order? Would you use peaceful coexistence? What word would you use, Helen, to describe the value that is undercut by anarchy and civil war?
It brings tears to my eyes, right?
Yeah,
that
right.
And I have passionate political feelings. I have issues that I feel extraordinarily, but that we would, I should get the right word, but fall into a society of such division that we might not be able to move forward. And I'm also fearful that there will be parts of the country where vigilante groups will be shooting people. I just saw this.
Okay, hold on. Yeah. I know it's terrible, right? So these are big fears, and you're not the only person who has these fears. But what I'm trying to get clear on here is you will not get emotionally grounded until you take these fears, which are identifying threats, you're not the only person who is concerned about these threats. You need to go all the way to figure out what is the value that is threatened.
Is that what I get that from the Offner quick reference sheet, which I sometimes use to come up with? Because sometimes people give you a list of 48,000 values, and I could kill myself just trying to get through it.
Right. But there's a short list there. Yes.
Is that where I would kind of, prompt?
That list of deep rational values could do it. It doesn't have to be one of those, but there's probably something on there. Cooperation might be on there. You know, I suggested, go ahead. What, Lynn?
Community.
Sense of community. Right. And I mentioned peaceful coexistence. You know, yes. Some people might put law and order maybe too concrete, and that may not be the words you'd use. But what are the words you would use to describe maybe harmony? Is that what you're really wishing for?
Yeah, and also that harmony, and that we get to root causes of violence and work on the root causes. I don't know. I feel like I'm moving into policy.
Well, hold on. But this is the way it goes. I just want to be really clear here. You had a reaction to what your husband said, which was
we would never be harmed. No, my cousin.
Cousin. Okay, I wondered because he lived in a different place. Your cousin. Okay, good. Got it. So you had a reaction to what your cousin said, which involved a tremendous amount of emotional reaction with a lot of complexity. And it's going to take you a little time to get emotionally grounded for this. This is actually why, like, one of the techniques that's in the Thinker's Toolkit is the empathy bath, because you actually need to go through each of those emotions and get them down. It's fine to spend a little time in the threats, but you want to try to get to the values, because that's when, you remember when you said that you were feeling it in your heart? That was when I first started putting it in terms of values for you. There's something important. And when you, go ahead, what were you going to say?
The threats relate to negativity, and you really want to try to move to positive values. What are the values you want that you feel are threatened by those comments?
Until you get to the values, until you actually get focused on it, you won't be calm enough to be able to deal with them. You'll still be thinking, oh my God, we've got to avoid this. What do I do? And when you're in that state, you have a little, I mean, this is the way fear is designed, to put on some tunnel vision and get you running the hell out of there. That is what fear is designed for. And it has a functional purpose in an emergency. But when you're on the phone with your cousin, it actually kind of gets in the way of having a conversation. And so it requires some steps to calm down and maybe actually take a time out and be able to come back from another perspective. So
I want to give other people a chance, but one of the things I've learned from you is to say, what is the purpose of my conversation?
Well, that
and
was
in
the
long
next
run,
thing. Yes.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In the long run, I want to be connected to him rather than have us. First of all, it's probably unlikely that I could change his position, just like it's unlikely that he would change my position. And so, I'd be interested in knowing what is behind his thinking without trying to change his thinking. But I don't know exactly what kind of questions I could ask, assuming I've gotten myself grounded.
Right. Yeah. Once you're grounded and you see that what you care about is, let's just call it peaceful coexistence. I'm trying to think of the antonym of anarchy, because what I heard was a fear of anarchy, which I also have a fear of. So let's just say decorum in the streets. I don't know what you would call it. But once you know that that's what you're after, and then one thing that happens once you think about that, you probably actually have a glimmer that he probably is after that too. He probably just has a very different idea of how to get it, right?
That would
be my guess, which puts you already in a position where you can be now curious about what his reasoning is. And you could actually ask him, what are you concerned about? And you could listen for the values that he's at and turn the conversation to the values. So suppose he is concerned about, like he says, I'm interested in law and order. And you say, So you're worried about what's going to happen out there? You could get him to draw that out. And you say, I think it's really important that we be able to go to a store and not worry about someone mugging us on the way or whatever. I don't know what the right thing would be. But you can actually express, you could find a small area of agreement that maintains the bond. Or you could also have, there's also the thing you can also have, you can also decide if these conversations are too hard, you can actually choose to have different conversations with him, right? There's also, you can also put up a boundary and say, if he wants to talk politics, you know what, I'm just going to excuse myself. I'm not going to give him a hard time, but I'm going to excuse myself because I think it's just, takes too much effort for me to stay present in that conversation with him. But I will yeah. have a conversation with him about these other things, and I will seek out his information, and you kind of take it on, you accept that this is the relationship you want to have with him. That yeah. is, it's all about self-acceptance in my experience.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Oh, okay, thank you great. Very much.
Good. Any other questions or comments? We're happy to stay on to ask some more questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
I was very, hi, Jean. I was very interested in your ambitious meta goal of rooting out the effects of progressive education in your mindset. Can you talk about, you know, what are the biggest impacts of a progressive education that are negatives that we need to think about?
Right. Sure. Well, I mean, there are two major problems in knowledge and in values. And so in knowledge, the problem is that the way that kids were taught when I was a kid and further on is that there aren't standards and there isn't a body of knowledge that you need to know and integrate. And this is a big problem. You know, this means that your knowledge is not organized. Like the classic progressive education thing is that everyone studies cows for a week, right? So they paint cows, they study the biology of cows, they, in their reading class, they read a story about cows. And what in social studies, they learn about the history of how cows were bred and domesticated. I'm just making this up, but that's like right. What's the word for the, it's not scarecrow. There's a word that means it's the crazy version that people use for what progressive education is. But there is some element of truth of that. And the idea is you learn all of these separate facts and you don't learn them as an integrated set of material organized by fundamentals. So that's the first problem. And that means that you don't, the reason that you need to have information organized by fundamentals is so that you have it available at your fingertips when you need it. And you don't need your knowledge organized by cows. You need it organized by like the nature of right, like rights. You need to know rights. You need to know morality. You need to know, you know, what art is. There are like philosophical concepts you need to know. And there's like, there is a history in terms of essentials you need to know. And none of that is considered important. And as a result, if you want to change that, you need to relearn these subjects in terms of fundamentals. So that's the knowledge part. The other part, which was I was less aware of and didn't even know was going to be part of the solution, is the values part. So the other part of progressive education is that because everything is sort of subjective and it's, you know, do what you want and there are no standards, right? You get praise for everything, right? Oh, good job, whatever you did. You did a bad job, you still get praise, you get a gold star, whatever. Because there isn't a focus on achievement and doing the hard work to have a big achievement and then and understand how to do that, you wind up with a flat value hierarchy. And I see this actually with young people. They have these shallow interests in a lot of things as opposed to a deep interest in something. And the problem with that is that that messes up your motivation for everything. It turns out if you have a flat value hierarchy, it's very difficult to decide what your priorities are because everything is equal. And it means that you need to kind of declare that something is going to, straw man is the word I was trying to come up with for progressive education.
Close.
But, yeah, what did I say, scarecrow?
That's, scarecrow.
Yeah, okay.
Close.
So if you have a flat value hierarchy and you try to prioritize, depending on what you have me look at, you say, oh, this is important, oh, this is important. And like me, one of the problems I've had is overcommitting. It turns out I think a lot of things are important. Well, they're all kind of equal. And now how do you change that? Because if you think everything is equal, that means nothing is important and it will be difficult to pursue work in one right. direction that really adds up to something substantive. Now, how do you change that? You change that by dint of effort toward a goal, and you need to prime the pump. You need to actually use willpower appropriately in a small way to gradually change your value hierarchy so that you have strong values. And that is something that's, you know, a lot of the work in the Thinking Lab involves that. That turned out to be one of the biggest things that I needed to learn. the precision in thinking, I actually learned in about 10 years. It took another 20 to really learn wow. how to retrain a value hierarchy.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting. A lot to think about.
Okay, great.
I want to make a comment to Helen.
Sure.
May I do that?
Sure.
I'm pro-gun because I grew up in the country and there are a lot of cornfields around and the cops don't come. So a lot of times you might be have a threat and you have to deal with it, such as someone trying to get into your car, a home invasion, someone coming on your property. So it's very normal to have a gun, even in the middle of cornfields. There are still bad guys out there.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. That's an interesting perspective that not having lived quite that rurally, I wasn't aware of.
Mary Aline asked the question about what's the difference between journaling and thinking on paper?
Yes, great question. And your hand is also up, Mary Aline. So thinking on paper is a very specific activity where you have a question that you want to answer. So thinking is a purposeful process of asking and answering questions. You basically take information out of your existing knowledge, you connect it with current observations in order to figure out something new. And so there's a question you're trying to answer. You're trying to actually manufacture new knowledge. That's what you're doing with thinking. And thinking on paper means you do that by writing out the thoughts as you do them in full sentences. But it's very purposeful and its goal is to create knowledge. Now, there are many other things you can do writing sentences on paper. So you can do what's called a thought download, meaning you just write down whatever thoughts are going in your mind right now. It could be on a particular topic, like you could just be reacting. Now, this is actually a very helpful thing when you don't feel like doing what was on the calendar right now. You do a thought download, one page. What do I feel about, like, I'm supposed to write the new marketing copy for such and such, and I don't feel like it's used. Take 3 minutes and write, I don't really feel like doing this. It's not going to turn out very well. You know, just plop down the negativity about it. That would be a thought download. Free writing would be a case where you just write down the stream of consciousness, and it could be that. Like in free writing, you might write, I don't know what to write. My mind is kind of blank. Oh, that's kind of weird. It's not actually blank because I've got these thoughts here. And it's, you know, it's just whatever. So there are a lot of things that you could write on paper. Thinking on paper means it's a purposeful process of trying to answer a question. Now, journaling is a daily process where you take a moment to do some kind of self-awareness exercise on paper. And it could be thinking on paper. It could be free writing. It could be like there's an exercise that I teach called Three Good Things that I mentioned to Nell, where you write down three good things that happened and why are they good? Why were they good? Now, that's sort of a thinking exercise, but it's the writing down the three good things isn't a thinking exercise. It's just kind of a reporting exercise. And so there are a number of different things that you could do in writing when you were journaling that weren't necessarily specifically trying to solve a problem or answer a question or make a decision. Does that answer your question, Mary Aline?
Yes, thank you.
Great, terrific. So do they overlap? So thinking on paper is a very specific written process. Journaling is a generic term for stuff you do in the morning to become more self-aware. Just checking to see. Yes, someone has put up some links for the needs inventory and the feelings inventory. These are ones from the Center for Nonviolent Communication. Thank you, Jenner. I think Jenner's the first name. Thank you for putting those up there. And actually, if you want to have fun, this is something I recommend. Go look. Just do a Google search on universal needs. Universal needs. That's what Rosenberg calls what I call deep rational values. He calls universal needs. And you'll get these lists. And go through these lists and pick the ones you think are most important to you. It's really a fun process because everything on the list is good. All right. Any other questions or comments before we draw a line? Actually, Lynn, I guess I would be interested if you have any closing comments that you wanted to make.
No, I've pretty much made them, I think. I mean,
Okay. That's a perfectly good answer. I just didn't want to close without giving you that opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, I think we've reached a kind of natural conclusion here. So I'm going to draw a line. Thank you guys very much for coming. Appreciate it. And again, if you decide to join the Thinking Lab today, there's no discount. It's $75 a month. There is a 3-month minimum, I should tell you. That's because you get a lot of material. So there's a 3-month minimum.
How about if they sign up for coaching that they also get the...
Or if you sign up for coaching, if you're in the Thinking Lab and you start coaching us today, you'll get a copy of the Thinker's Toolkit. That's a great idea. Okay. So we'll send you a copy of the Thinker's Toolkit if you do that. Okay. Well, folks, thank you very much. I think we'll draw a line here and have a great rest of your weekend.
Bye, guys.
Bye.